Welcome to the Born to Write podcast, dedicated to writers, authors, and the art of storytelling. Go behind the scenes where writers reveal their ups and downs and how they finally shared their stories with the world. Now, here is your host, Azul Terones.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm so glad to have Cameron Harold here. We've spoken before, and he has authored so many great books that we're going to get to dive into here. And one of the things I love about just connecting with Cameron is the way that he has such a great worldview. He's the author of Vivid Vision, Double Double, Free PR. And today we're talking about not only those books and more that he has, but The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs. Welcome to the show, Cameron.
Hey, Azul. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, so this book has been so instrumental. I remember when I first met Hal, actually at one of Chris Ducker's events, and you know, he shared about his Miracle Morning experience. I think it was 2016. So I knew of him, I knew who he was, and then I started reading his book. I was that person that said, I'm not a morning person. And that's a great place to start with this book. Anything about getting up early to do anything for people that don't think they're morning people, they often just dismiss it. And you talked a little about in the book that you kind of had that perspective. How has the Miracle Morning shifted the way you think about what it means to be a morning or night person?
It's interesting. It's shifted me in a couple ways and very kind of polar ends of the spectrum. So the first one is there's definitely morning. My natural is to sleep in a little bit and to run a little bit later. You know, still shutting down my day at around 10 o'clock and shutting down my work day at 5 o'clock. But I like my pillow and I like to kind of sleep a little bit and I like to ease into my morning. So I've at least learned that on those days to not beat myself up for not being perfect, which has actually been really healthy to realize that there's an ideal to stretch towards and some things that I can do better that make me feel awesome and give me a better day. But also I've learned to give myself a bit of a break and to not beat myself up when I'm not perfect. So it's not about having the perfect day 7 days a week. Now, that being said, the flip side of that is I've started to do something about 3 months ago that's actually been really powerful. I go to sleep at night with my blinds open. And I live in Vancouver and I look out over the ocean and the mountains and downtown. And I've got these amazing views from my home. And I started going to sleep at night with my blinds open and just enjoying the view. And I was doing that all winter and, you know, no problem. You wake up in the morning at 7 o'clock and it's still dark outside and right. Kind of a nice way to wake up, right? It's June now, man. It's 5:15 in the morning and the sun is fully up in Vancouver at 5:15 in the morning. And I'm sleeping with my blinds open and I'm waking up wide awake at 5 o'clock. And then I kind of like, oh God, maybe I should have closed my blinds last night. But I'm now realizing that it's helping me wake up naturally. And at about 5 o'clock, 5:10, I kind of lie in bed and give myself 5 or 10 minutes to kind of wake up. Now I'm turning on a podcast and I'm listening to and absorbing probably an hour to 90 minutes of podcasts almost every single day, weekends and day. So this morning I was up at 5:15. I didn't have my first call until 7:30, but I was 90 minutes into podcasts by 7:30 in the morning. And it was just a really great way to actually start my day and not to fight it.
Right. That's really great. I love the way that you found a natural principle to kind of help you kind of get up instead of fighting the alarm. What shifts had happened? So maybe for those who haven't read The Miracle Morning and don't know really the impetus of this book, maybe you can kind of shed a little bit of light into it so they can kind of catch up with us here.
Sure. So Hal Elrod and I, we co-authored it together. Hal wrote the original Miracle Morning and then we co-authored The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs. We met up at a Genius Network event that's hosted by Joe Polish. And Hal knew about all my business successes and asked me if I'd co-author it. So I said, sure, because I really loved his first work. The Miracle Morning is really based around what he calls the Morning Savers. And so it's an acronym, S-A-V-E-R-S. The first S is silence. And it's just to wake up and give yourself a moment of silence. So this morning, it was, you know, about 5 minutes of me just lying in bed and staring out at the ocean and the mountains and just kind of like really enjoying this beautiful sunrise over the city and just kind of taking it all in and going, wow, like what an awesome place I live in and a great way to start the day. And then you go into your affirmations, and your affirmations are a statement or a habit that you kind of will repeat to yourself. So mine is that I'm very confident in gaining confidence each day. It's my affirmation for this year. I've been saying it every single day and writing it down every day since January 1st. And then I have my visualization. So the V is when I'll either read a portion or listen to a portion of my vivid vision. And that comes right out of my book, Vivid Vision. I also cover it in The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs in more of a condensed format, where the Vivid Vision is a 4-page document describing your business or your life 3 years in the future in such vivid detail that it becomes a 4 or 5 page written document describing your life. So I will read a little bit of that or listen to a little bit of that every morning. And that kind of helps me with my visualization for the day. Then exercise, which is the E. So for me, exercise in the morning is tough. When I was training for my marathon, I was doing a lot of my morning runs, and that was great. I prefer to exercise at the end of the day and to try to get like a good workout in at the end of the day. But now I'm at least trying to do a few burpees or some jumping jacks or a 7 minute workout or something in the morning to at least get the blood flowing. And then I also now have added in a cold shower. At the end of my shower, I blast myself with cold water and I swear a little bit and hop around the shower. And
yeah.
Kind of curse everyone who's ever said that cold water is a good idea. But I bring that in as part of my exercise. And then for me, the R is reading. Now, I used to be a voracious reader. As a kid, I read a lot. As an adult, I read a lot. But around 6 or 7 years ago, my eyes started to go on me, and I realized that my ADD kicks in now more than it used to. And I find it tough to sit and actually read a book, especially if I forget to throw on my reading glasses. So what I've now started to do is I'm devouring all of that content by listening to podcasts. And this is one of the things I've tried to give myself a break on too, is just because it says R for reading doesn't mean we have to do it in the old-fashioned way of reading with our eyes. We can now, because of technology, have the author read it for us, whether we're devouring a podcast or having a book, an audiobook. So I use Audible or podcasts. And I have actually all of my 5 books are now on Audible as well. And then the last is scribing, which stands for writing, except, you know, writing just didn't fit into the acronym. So right. Scribing. So for me, it's my 5-minute journal or journaling. And I started that intensively about 2 years ago with just an actual journal where I would just dump some stuff down. And it's pretty amazing when you sit down with a blank page and just let yourself write. And it might be a list. It might be a to-do list. It might be just writing down some of your thoughts and ideas. But it's that practice of actually using a pen and paper. And I really recommend you use a pen and a book. So I use the 5-minute journal and then also just a blank journal. It's really, really powerful. So that's the morning savers. That's what the core of the book is around. And then what I added to it was hiring a second command, all of the success habits and focus habits for the rest of the day to keep yourself focused and get stuff done. And then the practice of the vivid vision concept.
Right. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the vivid vision concept because I thought it was really helpful. You discussed in the beginning of the book about it only takes 5 minutes to become a morning person. I know a lot of people are thinking, oh, that's really great. And you had some great persuasion of all the successful people that have used some sort of practice in its variation of the saviors. What is it that someone could do to take just 5 minutes to become a morning person if they have like they're really leery of this is going to really help them? Because I've seen the impact it's made on my life to practice these things. Tell us about that strategy.
Yeah, we actually had Lewis Howes wrote the foreword for our book, which was kind of great to get him involved. I've known Lewis for about 10 years, and he's one of the I think there were 10 people that we highlighted in the book who used these kind of morning practices. I would give you one tip that I think has just started working so well for me in the last few months is go to sleep with your blinds open, you know, your window open. You'll fall asleep. You'll sleep perfectly through the night because it's dark, and then wake up in the morning just from natural light from the outside and just wake up when you wake up. It's great. I also now I'm using a Roam device, which is the white noise in my room. And I used to think that was the craziest thing ever because I always wanted perfect quiet. Well, the reality is there's no such thing as perfect quiet because then you hear everything. So that's allowed me to sleep better, which allows me to wake up better in the morning.
Right. And I think one of the things that really struck me, particularly in this book, was that the people that really want to grow their business, grow in what they're doing, really need to focus on self-growth, not just business growth, not just the nuts and bolts of growing a business, growing a team. Let's talk more about how these principles can not only help you have a great day because it's, you know, start your mind at the right spot, your body. Ooh. What are the effects that having like this kind of practice can have on your entire business?
I think it goes back to the Latin saying of a healthy mind and a healthy body, mens sano in corpore sano. And it's just about realizing that when you wake up in the morning and you know, you're starting your day with gratitude, you're starting your day with exercise, you're starting your day with silence, you're kind of kickstarting your day instead of starting with the busy work. You know, as Jim Collins in Good to Great said, it's about working on the critical few things, not the important many. And I think so often people just wake up and they're rushed and they kind of dive into their email. They don't really get anything done. So by just starting your day off right, you will have a healthier life. You will have more gratitude. You will have more focus. You will live with intention. Because at the end of the day, you know, we are going to die. You really do want to get the most out of your life and the most out of your work efforts. But I think it starts with a little bit of that intention.
Yeah. Let's talk about the vivid vision kind of concept that you talk also in the book that helps people understand how you can apply these types of strategies in personal development and focusing on some of this transformation.
Yeah. So the idea of the vivid vision was one that I was introduced to around 25 years ago. I was at a lunch in Vancouver, Canada with a group of CEOs, and we had an Olympic coach come out and talk to us around the principle of visualization used by high performance athletes. And the idea was that athletes would picture themselves in the actual event. So they would close their eyes and visualize themselves and feel themselves and almost perform the event in their mind hundreds of times. So at the time they were performing the event, they were performing completely on instinct. And he said, if you could bring that tool into the business world, you could win. So we didn't really know how to do that. And we started looking for an analogy or a place that visualization was used. And we found anyone building a house or doing a renovation used the process of visualization. And how they used it was the homeowner was really the CEO of the project. But often the homeowner doesn't know how to build the house, right? We don't know how to do electrical or plumbing or throw up drywall, but we know what we want it to look like. We're very clear on the vision of what we want built. And if we can describe the vision in enough detail to the contractor can create blueprints and drawings and plans to make our vision come true. So if the contractor signs off on our vision in knowing what we want it built, and then we can sign off on the plans to make our vision come true, the employees can work from the plans to literally build our home. In the business world, it's the same thing. Imagine if you could describe your company in such a way that everyone could see what you could see. If you could describe your company in its finished state, you know, 3 years out, or if you could describe your speaking career, or if you could describe your life 3 years from now in vivid detail, people could help you make that happen. And you would start making decisions along that path, right? You'd start reading books that would help you make certain sentences of that vivid vision come true. You would start attending events. You would start saying yes to certain things that are going to help you and saying no to the ones that don't.
Great. So do you think, like, so when you're an entrepreneur and you're growing and you're starting to maybe have team members and there's lots of moving parts, I know that you, being the founder of the COO Alliance, you talk quite a bit about the second in command because that's your focus. How can these principles, as you discuss in the book, start to help people understand these visions can be translated into action?
Wow. How do you make it translate into action? So let's say, for an example, I was going to describe my company, the COO Alliance. You know, the COO Alliance is the only network of its kind in the world for the second in command. And if I described it 3 years from now, I could describe what my customers are saying about it, what my employees are saying about it. I could describe how the media is covering it. I could describe the actual events and the member engagement and how they're using the Facebook pages. I could describe some of the speakers coming. I could talk about the learning that's happening. I could describe our sales efforts, our marketing efforts, as if it's already come true. When it's so clear, and that 4 or 5 page document is so clear, everyone can start making decisions on how to help make the whole document come to life. In fact, every sentence is a future state, and they can figure out 1 or 2 projects to make each sentence come true. So it starts giving the employees and my suppliers and my customers some idea of how to make those decisions because they're clear on why we're doing what we're doing, right? Instead of just, I use an analogy of these 3 people out making bricks. You know, you've got 3 guys that are out sitting on the road. And you ask the first guy, what are you doing? He said, I'm making bricks. You ask the second guy, what are you doing? He said, we're building a wall. I'm making the bricks to build a wall. You ask the third guy, what are you doing? He said, we're building a cathedral to worship God. And I get to make the bricks to build the left wall of the cathedral.
Right.
So when you talk about when people are clear on what they're doing, they know why they're doing what they're doing. It gives them more engagement. They have a better purpose. So the vivid vision not only shows core purpose, but it really illustrates every single thing and why we're doing what we're doing, and much more than a typical vision statement does.
Right. How do you know when you're ready for this kind of transition? Obviously, everyone can practice.
Everyone's ready.
Tell us more, because I feel like that's true for the Miracle Morning principles and Savers. But for this vivid vision exercise, you know, it might be an entrepreneur just starting out, just a team of one. If it's not too late, what keeps people from taking action like this, seeing the forward thinking or the visionary view?
I think most people wake up in the morning and are busy. So they just get on with their day being busy, and they don't actually begin with the end in mind, as Stephen Covey tried to teach us in 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, right? They just start their day, and all of a sudden they wake up and they're 80 years old and they're like, oh shit, that was kind of a waste, right? So they don't think about where they're going. It's the same thing as like hopping in your car and just driving around aimlessly. That's how most people run their life, unfortunately. So let's say you're thinking about your life for a second. If you were to roll the camera ahead 3 years
and you were to talk about your friendships 3 years from now, you were to talk about your relationships with your family, you were to talk about the fitness and the activities you're doing and the fun that you're having and what you're engaged in, your spirituality or fit or faith. If you were to describe all aspects of your life, almost as if you were writing a 3 or 4 page description of you as the person 3 years from now, how you wake up in the mornings, what your meals are like, you know, what you do day to day. If you described all of that, that future state, you could then bring it forward and start making decisions aligned with that. So I have friends now who will drop me a note and saying, hey, I read in your vivid vision that you want to do a lot more golf. Do you want to go golfing today? But it's only because they read that, that they know that, right? They know it's a part of me. Or they'll say, hey, I read that you, you know, you want to have more friends over to your home for dinner. Why don't we line up a dinner for a bunch of CEOs at your house instead of doing it at a restaurant?
Yeah.
So it's me being clear on what I'm trying to do and sharing it with others. They start conspiring to help make it come true as well.
Right. And I think that has a lot to do with what you talk about also is about self-leadership, about being your own leader in the things you want to be.
Yeah. And I think that I think the reason that most people don't do it is A, they've never heard of this tool before. So they don't know a better way. And B, they don't take pause to say, I want to design my life and build something. I'll give you a business analogy that's a great one. Do you know the Tesla Model S, when it first came out around 10 years ago, 8 years ago, do you know why it had the 7-seat option?
No, I don't.
So it had the 2 seats in the front, the 3 in the back, and then you could also have the 2-seat jump seat in the very back. The reason is that Elon had triplets and twins. So he had 5 kids. If he was going to build a car, it had to fit his family, right? Why would he build a great car that couldn't fit his family? And then it's amazing for someone who's tall. Elon's 6'5". You know, I'm 6'4". When I sit down in it, there's tons of room behind me. So even though I have my seat fully extended, the person sitting behind me has lots of leg room because Elon's 6'5". It had to fit him. There's also lots of headroom because we're both tall. And then it had to be super fast. You know, his former car was a McLaren F1. So he's got this super fast, super sleek vehicle that fits him and fits his family. And then he kind of said, who's crazy enough to want to help me build this?
Right.
He didn't sit down and say, how do I make the Prius faster? Or how to make the Prius sexier? He started and leaned out into the future and worked it backwards.
Right. So this is incredible. So let's talk about some of the leaders you highlight, the ones that stand out who maybe put something into practice or of using these principles and how it's equated to some of the success, or at least we could make the inference that their success comes from putting these habits into place.
Well, so I reached out to my network and I've done about 600 paid speaking events now in 24 countries on 6 continents. So just from being all over the world and being in the masterminds I'm in, I'm connected to a lot of really amazing people. So I threw a couple notes out to my network and had all these really successful people come back to me saying, yes, that they actually follow some morning habits. Yes, they have morning routines. And I didn't say specifically what our morning savers was. I just said, do you have a morning routine? Will you share it with me? And then we took the best ones and we just shared those in the books. So that was the whole purpose of it.
That's great. I know one of the ones you mentioned was Yannick, and I follow him and we've talked a couple times. And the great thing I love about his version of his journaling and stuff is always uses images and he shares them quite a bit, you know, about what he's putting out there. How important is it to share your morning practice, talk about it, and communicate with other people that you're doing it? Does that matter much?
I think you start getting a little bit of the commitment when you share it with someone else, almost like having an accountability partner. By the way, just because your audience is all about writing books, Yannick's new book, and he's just signed a deal. I can't tell you who it's with, but he's just signed a book deal. His new book will have all of his drawings in it.
That's awesome. I love his books.
It's basically all of his journals with all these insanely amazing drawings and thoughts, and it's coming out as an amazing book. So and it's going to be super professionally done.
Awesome.
I think it's important to have an accountability partner. So I have a daily accountability partner, Joe Polish, and Joe and I both set our daily top 3 goals together. So we use an app called Commit to 3. And first thing in the morning, we set our goals. And the first person to set their goals, it pings the other person. So the other person sees that, you know, so Joe will see if I set mine first, he'll see that mine are set. Or if he sets his first, I'll see that his are set.
That's great. So
Joe's commitments were to go through mastermind.com videos, to edit 3 of the big emails that he had to, and to prepare for a meeting with Dean Graziosi. And my top 3 were to review the ad roll and retargeting ads, to do a focused briefing call with Dimitri for my new website, and to review the budget for our marketing team with my director of ops.
That's great.
And those were shared at 7 in the morning, both of us.
And do you feel like the switch that you've made since you've been practicing these morning habits, can you see the difference? Can you observe from yourself? I know as we change, it's hard to notice, but how has this manifested in your life with your business and the work you're doing?
The biggest one is around gratitude. So that was something that I now use the 5-minute journal, and then I have this gratitude ball that I will actually write down stuff and shove it into this glass ball. The whole idea of the attitude of gratitude and starting off my day with gratitude has become really powerful, to the point where, you know, the other day I saw a bunch of, you know, food and stuff left out on the counter from my kids. And my initial response was to be upset. And then I smiled and I thought, it's so great that there's food left everywhere because it means my kids are still at home. Mm. And there's something around this. And I only started the principle of gratitude and writing down three things that I'm grateful for every morning. And then at the end of the day, writing three things I was grateful for about the day. I only started that 2 years ago, but that has become massive for me. I've always been a positive person, but this idea of gratitude, and not just the gratitude of like, oh, it's nice to live in a clean city and it's nice to have like the amazing air in BC, but like really digging and saying like, what are you really grateful for?
Yeah.
I had a friend that was killed on Friday, and I'm really, really grateful for the time that I had with him and the lessons that I had of just deeply caring about other people and service. This guy was just really involved in helping people with addiction, and as much as I can be so upset about how he was killed and frustrated, I'm also can pause enough to take something from that.
Right. And I think this, you mentioned it in the book a couple different ways, but you talk about the focus on being and being present as opposed to the doing. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, even writers who commit to a habit of writing, can focus on doing rather than being. What would you say about that?
Well, I think when you start your morning by just the silence and the, the affirmations and the reading and that exercise, it really does free you up instead of starting your day by hopping into email. So I think it really forces presence. It forces intention. It slows your morning down instead of like rushing into your day. You know, look, I used to be the guy who, if I had a 7:30 coaching call with one of my clients on Zoom, I would wake up at 7:16. I would probably get out of bed at 7:20. I would shit, shower, and shave, and I would be sitting down at my desk at 7:29, and Zoom would open and I'd be there on time with absolutely no presence, right?
Right.
Kind of faking it in a way of going, hey, I'm here. Well, I wasn't there. I was still half asleep, or I hadn't eased into my day, or I didn't have anything inspirational to bring into the call. And there's something about that intention that just changes things.
Right. It's something about just being in control of your day instead of the day controlling you.
For sure. I think that's what's so important that I learned from athletes around this principle of visualization, is that athletes really, really do over and over and over and over again practice in their mind, so that when they're doing it, they act completely on instinct. And if we do that more with our life, stuff really does unfold, right? If you picture yourself driving from your house to your work and enjoying the ride. I'll give you an example. One of my former business partners, there was a guy at our office that used to piss him off. Every morning, Terry would get pissed off by this guy, Greg, and it used to drive him crazy and it would ruin his morning. And so then one day, Terry wrote down on his to-do list, get pissed off by Greg. As something that he was supposed to get done. So he was like getting ready for the morning. He's like, yep, Greg's going to piss me off. He goes, instead of being upset, I'm just going to write it down. And when it happens, I'll check it off as having accomplished it. So Greg pissed him off. He's like, yep, there it is. Crossed it off and went on with his day. There's something like, you know, I'm going to drive to work. I'm going to enjoy the scenery. I will enjoy the views. I'm going to look at all the cherry blossoms. I'm going to listen to the radio or some music instead of a podcast to just allow myself to ease into the morning. I'll probably get I'll probably have a bus pull in front of me and I'll have some guy cut me off and I'm just kind of going to react positively because they're probably racing to get to, you know, their son's morning practice or something, right? When you go into that intention and stuff happens, you don't react, you respond, or you're prepared for it. So it's all okay.
Right. And I think this has to do with what you mentioned in the book, which is the unwavering focus you need to be successful, because you won't be deterred with the negative things that come to life, because you can't get rid of those things. But this unwavering focus is something you speak about. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the unwavering focus, what you also talk like that, I think that's maybe where something comes from this journaling. And you mentioned Yannick Silver. Yannick is probably the single most important person in my network, because he was really the first one. I had a friend, Tim Ferriss, that was at my house for the weekend. And this was 11 years ago. Tim was at my home and we were hanging out together and we'd met randomly. So it's not like my network was big. He was one of the only people I knew. Then he mentioned Yannick. And so anyway, Yannick, blah, blah, blah. But Yannick, his journaling, the fact that he journals every single day allows him to be introspective.
It allows him to reflect on things that have happened and to grow from that. And I think that's allowed him to stay completely calm and completely present and completely happy, because he's practicing this introspection every single day. And it's not work to him. It's the only way he knows about going about his life now. I don't think he could have a life without that.
Right. I think that's a great evidence to putting these things into practice, applying them to business. People that are authors, people who are learning from authors who are standing up to be leaders, first should be leaders of themselves and focus on this development of self. What's a final takeaway that people can take putting these practices into their life?
I think the big one, I call it rule number six. So rule number six is it's an old story about Gorbachev and Reagan meeting over in the Soviet bloc 30 years ago, trying to solve the world's problems. And they'd finally met all day listening to each other over translation. And, you know, throughout the meeting, somebody kept coming in, getting upset, and Gorbachev would laugh and he would say, "Remember rule number six." And the person would smile and laugh and he would calm down and he'd walk out of the room. And it happened three times throughout the all-day meeting, you know, "Remember rule number six." So Reagan at the end of the day said, "You know, we've solved all the world's problems and the wall's going to come down now in Germany. But I need to know what rule number six is." And Gorbachev laughed and he said, "Rule number six is don't take yourself so effing seriously." And Reagan said, "Well, what are the first five rules?" Gorbachev said, "There aren't any." I think that's what we have to try to remember with all this, is like, this is just what we do for fun. This is just what we do to make money. Like, if we can't have fun along the way, what's the point? And, you know, self-growth and business growth, it doesn't have to be so serious, right? But we only get one life. Like, we're all just walking each other home. We're all going to die. Wouldn't it be better if we were trying to be a little bit more proactive in our life versus letting it happen to us?
Yeah, that, you know, so this idea of not taking life so serious, I know we talked earlier before we got on the air here that we both have kids. As they're growing older, you start thinking about, you know, the house being empty. How do you or do you talk with this sort of habits with your kids? Do they observe it? Do they practice? I know it's one thing to make the transition yourself, but do practices like this get absorbed by your family? Do they ask questions? Do you teach it to them? How does that work?
I'm teaching it to them and I'm forcing it at times with them as well. So I'll do things like both of my sons who are 16 and 18 have a gratitude journal, the 5-minute journal, and they fill it out. Sometimes we miss for a few weeks and sometimes we do it every day for a few weeks. We do at dinners occasionally where we sit down and do, you know, a rose and thorn. We talk about what's one great thing that happened from the day and one bad thing that happened for the day. I'm pushing them to listen to podcasts, and I found podcasts that are interesting for kids around the things that they want to learn about. Instead of them just listening to podcasts around gaming, they're listening to some podcasts around business growth, and they've gotten engaged in TED Talks. Both of them really like listening to TED Talks now. So yeah, we are doing some of that stuff for sure.
Yeah, that's great. I know that one of my favorite lines in the musical Into the Woods was, sometimes kids, they don't do what you say, but they listen. And sometimes just your act of doing the things or sharing them will eventually meet. And I used to send my son books, and I didn't know if he ever read them until recently. He's like, "Hey, Dad, you know, in that book," I was like, "Oh, he read it."
Yeah, I've been noticing the same now with some TED Talks where my son's actually listening to some on his own that he's finding. So that means it's starting to stick. And then I'm very fortunate that I work from home. And when I'm doing coaching calls with clients or doing, you know, interviews with the media, they definitely are hearing me and seeing me. And so some of it's starting to stick, I'm sure.
That's great. Well, I know that it's such a pleasure to have you here talking about these principles, applying to the Miracle Mornings for entrepreneurs to their life. I know it's made a big impact on me. I was really grateful for meeting how I'm connecting. I think, you know, if anyone's going to make a difference, they have to start with self. Tell us more about where we can find you. I know that you talked about the CEO Alliance and you have multiple books, which we'll link them all up in the show notes. Where can they find more about the Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs, or how they can get involved with that sort of habit?
Sure. So yeah, all of my books are available on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. So The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs, Double Double, Vivid Vision, Free PR, and Meeting Suck are all available, all five. And then also the Second in Command podcast is a great one for them to check out. Everyone tends to interview the entrepreneur, the CEO. We only interview the second in command. So we want the rest of the story.
Yeah. Gosh, so great. Thank you so much, Cameron. I love talking to you. I feel like have a great understanding of like your worldview. And I've learned so much from your podcast, from your books. And thank you for taking time to share with us again today.
Thanks as well. Appreciate it. And if you're ever out in Vancouver, let's go for a hike.
That sounds awesome. We'll do that.
All right.
Join me again for another interview for great authors who talk about their story, how they got there, and why they feel like they're born to write. Please subscribe to this podcast, leave an honest review, and you can always find me at CoachAzul.com.